Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now several months into the Trump administration, and activists have scored some important victories in those months. Yet there's always more to be done, and for many people, the question of where to focus and how to help remains. In this series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
My name is Dottie Nygaard. I am an emergency room nurse. I work in Sutter Tracy Hospital in Tracy, California. I've been an active member with CNA since 2012 and a member of the National Nurses United National Network, Nurse Network.
Excellent.
RN Response Network.
Right.
I'm Rhonda Reisner. I am a registered nurse from Dayton, Ohio. My specialty is also the emergency department. I've worked in the private sector for 22 of that 28 years, and I am now a nurse who works in the emergency department at the VA in Dayton, Ohio.
All right. Excellent. And so I understand both of you have been doing Hurricane Harvey relief as part of the RNRN network, right?
Correct. Yes, we have.
And so start by just telling us a little bit about what your experiences have been doing that.
Well, we went down for a one-week deployment. We were there on this third week of after the disaster. We saw a lot of chronic issues. We saw a lot of acutely ill patients from heart attacks, strokes, hypertensive crises, people who had very high blood sugars. Those were all probably a result of not having access to health care initially after the hurricane, and also losing their medications in the flood thereafter.
Yeah, and I understand, too, that there are problems with the flood water itself.
We did not actually encounter, because we were 2 weeks after the fact, so a lot of the water started receded. So, but what we had seen is a start of flu. So this wasn't just a, you know, little viral bug going around. It was actually confirmed flu. So, you know, we saw that this was kind of an early start of the flu season. So because of the, you know, confined quarters and the large number of residents, we saw kind of a small outbreak of flu, as well as some GI issues. So, you know, this is something that happens when you're in confined quarters and have, you know, a lot of different people with different immune systems present. So, but it was very empowering to see that we had the resources available to treat people. So, it was a very, you know, combined group effort. So, a good team, teamwork, a lot of great teamwork.
There was lots of resources down there that was available, and we worked in tandem with that. Norovirus was also being confirmed right as we were leaving, which, you know, the danger of that is that it spreads quickly, especially in confined places like that. But we were able to recognize the symptoms, assess that pretty quickly, and confine people and keep them separate from the population, the general population. So, you know, being able to recognize that quickly and be able to get them, you know, isolated was a really important thing. And I think that, you know, that's something that we're pretty proud of as nurses, to be able to recognize those signs and symptoms and do what we need to do very quickly and efficiently.
Yeah. I imagine things like that can be a real problem if you have people staying in shelters and you have a lot of people in a small space.
Yes, that was a constant concern of everybody involved.
So tell us a little background on the RNRN program.
It started, I think, initially from the California Nurses Association post-Katrina. They let me back up a minute. Do you want to go ahead and take that since you're from here, Dottie?
Actually, you know, it is our volunteer network. It's nurses that actually do come in and sign up to volunteer with the national it's RN. It actually started after the South Asian tsunami. Mm-hmm. So we had quite an impact and a initial relief effort that went over. From there, you know, it's just grown. So I think to date we have, you know, over 20,000 volunteer or RNs, you know, that are actually powered by NNU that, I think 2,000 are on standby and ready to go if there is a need. And that's what we do as nurses. We go where there's a need, where people want us to help, because, you know, that's what, we can do best.
And we also responded to Haiti post earthquake, and also in the Philippines after their typhoon. We also work with the Navy with Continuing Promise, which happens every 2 years. 30 plus NGOs work together with the United States Navy, and we deploy on the USNS Comfort. And I was actually able to deploy in 2015 on the South American six-month deployment. I did a two-week stint in Haiti just to follow up with a lot of the earthquake relief that was started directly after the earthquake as well.
Yeah.
So there was some follow-up care involved with that.
It seems like I've been saying to people all for the last few weeks, it's just everything feels really apocalyptic right now because there's so much going on. But I imagine right now you have a lot of places that people are thinking of going to, right? Between more hurricanes and more earthquakes and everything.
Well, and we're ready to deploy. We're on standby and we're just waiting for the call. So we're able to jump in where needed when asked. So that's what we're waiting on at this point.
Yeah. And so, Dottie, also, you went to Standing Rock when the encampment was there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I traveled up in December with, a small deployment of nurses. It was actually the time frame when we had the veterans coming up to support. The experience was very emotional because it was incredibly, the encampment itself was this huge group of global activists from all over the world that came together to stand in solidarity with, you know, the native tribes just trying to protect access to their water. Mm-hmm. So it was this incredible educational time for me. It's beyond actually explaining, but I grew so much from this experience because it just opened up my eyes to really truly what's happening globally when you have such a force of people coming together to try and preserve and protect just one of your most basic natural resources speaks really loud and clear what our world is facing right now. So, when you have, corporations that come in to try and, gain control over, your well-being, your land rights, and your water access, without any say, it was a game changer for me. So yes, I went up to help supply or provide medical care. For me, it was just this incredible learning opportunity to really understand at a much deeper level what, we as not only a nation, but as a world face with, having these big, corporations come in with so much power, and they can change your livelihood in just a blink of an eye. So The solidarity was amazing. The experience was, we hit right when a blizzard came in, so we did have to utilize quite a bit of our expertise with, we saw a lot of frostbite and a lot of, chronic illness, people that did not, have access to their medication. So again, some of the basic chronic illnesses, and especially with the Native Americans, their access to medical care is very fragmented and limited. And we, you know, were able to help provide at least some kind of consistency for a time frame for a lot of people. So it was a great time to be able to utilize nursing skill to assess the needs of, you know, the people that came to show support. I think it was, you know, we're all kind of saddened with the outcome, but, you know, we have, you know, that's what solidarity is about. When voices speak up, we can change things. So there's still hope that there'll be change with a lot of the outcomes down the road.
And if I can,
go ahead.
On the consistency of the care that we provide, I think that's one of the things that they were really appreciative of in Houston, was that our team came in and gave consistency for 1 week with being able to supply resources there with the nurses to take care of the patients for that entire time we were there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really something that I think we don't talk enough about, that a lot of people don't get consistent care for many reasons, not just because there's a hurricane.
Well, it plays on the fact that, you know, our healthcare system is broken. And we have very, you know, fragmented care. We have, you know, many that can't afford insurance. There's still, you know, millions of people that are not insured in this great nation of ours. And we have people that are insured but are afraid to use it because of their copays and their deductibles are so high. So, you know, it does, it hinders, you know, those that do want to seek care, and only, you know, perpetuates illnesses or their, you know, whatever is ailing them at the time to become even more of a problem. So we see people sicker in the ERs now. Preventative care is very minimal. It's not an emphasis. It's not a priority. So, you know, it speaks loud of how we really have to fix the system first before we can really help our communities heal.
Well, and I worked 18 years in an inner city ER where we took care of patients who absolutely, if they would have had preventative care for hypertension and heart disease and diabetes, I wouldn't have seen them a generation later in congestive heart failure and having amputated limbs from poorly controlled diabetes and heart attacks and strokes from uncontrolled cardiac disease. And I mean, prevention is the key. And our battle cry is that healthcare is a human right. And that's why we really support Bernie Sanders' Senate Bill 1804, which is our expanded Medicare for all. And we think that everyone in this country deserves access to healthcare.
One of the things that I remember from the nurses that I spoke with after Hurricane Sandy here in New York was them saying that, you know, doing that direct care after the storm, they're providing better health care than a lot of people had ever gotten.
Yes, we see that. And there's, I mean, we don't need to wait for a disaster to happen to provide every person in this country with health care. We don't have to wait for a disaster because healthcare is a disaster. So we need to look at prevention and making sure that everybody has some sort of access to healthcare. And we believe that everyone in this country deserves that.
Yeah. So I want to switch gears a little bit and ask about the climate justice work you're doing, since we're talking about hurricanes and Standing Rock and all of these things, and how this connects up to the work that you're doing as a union around climate change.
you know, we brought a lot of awareness with, you know, marches and rallies to bring attention to the fact that, you know, climate crisis right now is all science. You know, it's all science-based. We see the evidence. And, you know, we are a profession based on science. So we see the tie-in. We understand the data. We understand what is being presented. And we need to come up with true concrete solutions that make differences, that can bring right. together a good plan to solve the problem. But it has to be coming, it has to come together in total agreement. And that's the resistance right now. I don't think we have enough politicians that have the political will to step forward and say, you know, yes, this is happening, and yes, we need to be more aggressive and assertive. I don't think we have the time to wait. We have to be the ones that educate the public so that we can grow the informed, you know, country to stand up together, because, you know, we're seeing it right now. All these devastating hurricanes, the earthquakes that are happening, you know, there's a tie. There's a reason why they're happening. You know, the ocean is warmer. Our climate is changing. We're holding on to more CO2. And we need to look at what is the cause. And until we get off fossil fuels and get into more clean energy, we're just kind of pushing the can down the road. So more disasters are going to happen. We are going to be deployed more at more devastating events. And they can be prevented if we could just be more aggressive and more assertive and do the right thing and change the direction of fossil fuels.
And I don't think that the average citizen really understands the correlation between all the ill effects that are going on directly with climate change and fracking and pipelines and pollution, and I just don't think that they make that connection. And I think that that's a hindrance to what we're trying to do as law.
To raise awareness. That's, you know, part of our profession too, is to teach, to educate. So, it's bringing, you know, the science forward to show that this is truly happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking about one of the organizers that I know from the South Bronx, who would always say, you know, we see the first line of climate change right here, which is our breathing, because the air is polluted right away. And so before you even see massive storms from climate change, you see the highest rates of asthma in the country. And so I imagine you both have seen a lot of the immediate effects of our energy system.
Yes, I live in the Central Valley. So, yes, right. We have the highest incidence of children asthma. So, you know, the air from the Bay Area gets blown in and trapped in the Central Valley. And, you know, we have, you know, still a lot of two large interstates that drive right up and down to the Central Valley. And it does. It, you know, we have a lot of pollution there. So, these are the effects. And it actually affects the most vulnerable, our seniors and our children.
Mm-hmm. So with that, I want to bring this back around to healthcare policy on a national level. The Republicans are trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act again, but this past week we saw Bernie Sanders introduce a single-payer bill in the Senate that now has 17, I think, Democratic co-sponsors. So at the same time as it kind of feels like we're in a, you know, one step forward, two steps back moment, but I'd love to hear what you think is people who've been advocating for single payer for a long time.
Well, it's exciting to see that there's more interest this time around. I think that the power of our nursing union has really educated the public and our legislators, and we're really putting pressure on them that they need to support this bill, because there's lots of issues with the ACA, but certainly repealing and replacing isn't the answer. So we need to look at a system that actually works. We're not trying to make it better. We're not trying to just prop up what's already there. We're trying to have a solution to the problem. And we see Medicare for All as the solution. We can deliver care more efficiently and less expensively than the way that these insurance companies have done it for decades. So it's time for them to move aside and let us push forward with the solution to the problem.
Yeah. And so, Rhonda, you're from Ohio. I know that your senator, one of your senators, the other one presumably is not going to vote to take away health care, but that one of your senators is considered a key swing vote on this. So do you know what people are doing to try to pressure him to not vote against even keeping the Affordable Care Act at this point?
It's if you're talking about Rob Portman, very, very difficult. We have put pressure on him from phone calls. We've made visits to his offices in Columbus, his satellite offices across the state, as well as I've lobbied him directly in Washington as well. I was very sad to see that he voted yes the last round. So I don't have a whole lot of hope. I saw him in the airport and last week, well, actually when I was coming home from Houston and gave him my thoughts on the matter. I just think that we just need to put continued pressure on his office, making calls and writing letters and emails and lobbying them locally and nationally to support what the governor, for heaven's sakes, of Ohio is even supporting. So, did have Medicaid expansion in Ohio. And so even the governor of Ohio wants him to do the right thing. So it's just going to be a grassroots effort to put pressure on Portman to do the right thing for the constituents and citizens of Ohio.
I know you're at the convention right now, but are there any plans going forward for both sort of defensive battles to try to save what people have and then for more organizing around the single payer bill going forward?
I just think that our number one priority is to push for the Senate bill 1804, because we've said for years that Medicare for all is the way to go, and that's going to be, I think, our battle cry.
And it works. If you look at, our senior citizens, you talk to any senior, they love their Medicare. They'll tell you, don't touch it.
Yeah.
So it's a plan that works. All we're asking is just expand the life, time. It's from birth to death. And, it's something that we all deserve, and it's the right thing to do.
We just don't believe that healthcare should be a profit-driven entity. If we see it, we see it as a basic human right, and that's our priority, is to care for our patients and to care for our communities and care for Mother Earth, because she's pretty angry right now.
Yeah. Excellent. And so how can people keep up with both of you and get involved in the fight for single payer?
Well, they can go on our website, www.nationalnursesunited.org, and you can, there's lots of information on how to get involved there. Immediately they can call their senators and, their congresspeople and tell them, to support, Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. So Senate Bill 1804, that's the most immediate thing we could do at this point. There's lots of ways to get involved, but there's resources on our website to direct you on how to do so.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.